From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises Incorporated in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from TGM will be along to look at the cash grain markets. He's in Windsor, Illinois. And as we close out our half hour together, agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt will be here to talk about the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Along the way today, I'll tell you how to send in a sample of water hemp to find out whether it's resistant to glyphosate, other herbicides as well. The Illinois Soybean Association has made it free of charge once again this year. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Checking the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit finished at 6.43¾. That's down a dime on its settlement price at 1.15 this afternoon. September's at 6.60¾, 8.5 cents lower. The hard red in Kansas City for the afternoon settled at $6.81, down 13.5. Now back in Chicago for the corn pit. July futures 5.55¼, down 4¼ at the settlement price. September at 5.25½, down a penny and a quarter. In December, futures at 5.22, 1.5 cents higher. The March contract at 5.32¾, a settlement at 1.15, up a penny and 3/4. And the May contract at 5.40½, 1.5 cents higher. July soybeans $13.40, down 33¼ on a settlement price. The August at 13.22¾, 31¾ lower. September at $12.93¾, down 27¼. And November at 12.70¼, down 22¾. January soybeans 12.73¼, down 22¼. And the March contract of next year at 12.53¼, down 20¾. July bean meal at 394.50, down 15.40. July soybean oil at 49.20, down 49 cents. The live cattle finished the June at 117.10, up 65. August at 118.90, 97.5 cents higher. August futures at 156.80, up 72.5. And June lean hogs $2.62½ higher at 89.80. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures trading the July at $86.61 a barrel, down $1.21. Ethanol at $2 a penny and 7 tenths, a penny and 3 tenths lower. Natural gas a penny and 4 tenths higher at $2.43 2/10 of a cent. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.70 6/10 of a cent, down 3 3/10 of a cent. The gold futures on the afternoon at $1,562.60 an ounce, down 80 cents. And the dollar at 83.04. That's just about unchanged on the day. The CRB index at 273.05, down 2. Here's what the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says. For this afternoon, sunny skies, a high this cannot be this afternoon's because it says it's 88 degrees and there's no way. So let's try tomorrow. Sunny skies and a high of 74. Oh, this is just a very late one. Well, I don't have the forecast in front of me, so we won't have to worry about that. That's from a couple of days ago. We'll throw it out. So what can we talk about? But, well, the bus trip. We're headed down to see Dan Zwicker. We'll talk to him in just a moment. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. We have about 35 folks, actually, I think 37 now, that have booked, and I know there are a couple of more in the lineup to go. If you have not booked yet, probably ought to get to the website or call this number at 217-333-7300. Just about 15 slots left and available. Out of that 55 bus slot, we're going to leave 3 seats open, so there are maybe 16 or 17 still. If you want to come down, it's about $800, a little less if you're double occupancy. If you can 3 or 4 in the occupancy, that number goes down. But nonetheless, we're going to head to Louisiana, to the Port of New Orleans, and see CGB Enterprises export facility there. That'll happen the 20th to the 24th of August.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now on the phone line with us from CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, is Dan Zwicker. Thanks, Dan, for taking the time with us today. Are you actually in Louisiana today?
No, actually, I'm in rainy Decatur here with the moving van.
I wondered that it rang through to your cell phone, but it just sounded like you were on a cell. So it is.
Yeah.
It is rainy Decatur. A little bit of rain here. Let's see. I don't think that I have what our storm. Well, 0.4 inch apparently so far. At this point, the rain rate is 0.4 inch if it keeps up. We'll see whether that happens or not across the state of Illinois. There have been some calls for good rains and others that have said not so great. Nonetheless, in Chicago, the futures marched lower. Was that in the soybeans because of the rainfall or long liquidation at the end of the month or a combination of the two?
Well, I think a lot of it is probably month-end long liquidation. I think it's... the funds got a little too far ahead of themselves on the long side of the market. I think ultimately they're going to be right, want to be long the soybean market as we go forward. But every once in a while you just run out of buyers, and when you run out of buyers, the market will fall back on its own weight, and that's basically what we're seeing here in the soybean complex.
I better correct myself. Decimal points in the wrong place. We've had 0.07 inch here, and it's falling at a rate of 0.04 inch in Urbana-Champaign. So a very, very slow rainfall at this time. When you look at the charts, what has changed since last week?
Well, you still have to be, you know, when you look at the monthly charts, they look terrible. I mean, or they really favor the bear side.
Mm-hmm.
On both corn and soybeans. Lead option futures have really taken a pretty good hit here during the month of May, and that kind of tees up really that the market's going to struggle as we go forward, at least for another 30 days or so. But we all know that we are going to be entering the critical growing season here. This rain, I think, is a real blessing for those that are going to catch a half an inch of rain or an inch of rain. But from what I can understand on the weather maps, it's going to be primarily, you know, in the northern parts of the Corn Belt, and the southern parts are going to come up a little skimpy. So, and long-range weather maps are still favoring more of a warm and dry type pattern. But I think what it kind of says is that the bull spread that we saw going on in the spring, which was owning the old crop, selling the new crop, that probably is over with, at least for right now. If old crop supplies need to ration themselves to kind of finish out the growing season, we're probably going to do it with the basis levels and try to allocate cash resources that way. It does look like, you know, we're going to have some early corn harvest. It'll come one or two ways, either through natural maturity because of early planting, or if we continue in a very dry pattern here as we go into the summer, we'll have a, you know, sharply reduced, weather-reduced type early harvest. So we are going to get some early inventories in, but we don't know exactly how it's all going to play out as we go on into the fall months.
How bad does the corn chart look to you?
Well, I think if you want to take a look at the lead futures and just eyeballing it, it does say that 450 futures is at least on the dartboard anyway. Now, that wouldn't be that much of a drop when you take into account the December futures is already into the 520s. So to speak, that means that maybe December futures has another 70-cent type downside risk if everything goes real well through the growing season. But, yeah, when you look at that monthly corn chart, it does indicate that you could slip back to 450 futures fairly quickly.
And the continuous corn chart posting a pretty good size outside down month.
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt about it. The Bears have the month of May. And now the key here will be how much follow-through we get on the downside as we go on into the first week of June. Okay, now, and that's going to depend upon the weather pattern. And we'll have to kind of see. I mean, this is, we're 3 weeks away from a summer solstice. So I think this rain here is what we get is what we get. If you kind of miss this one, you might it might be a little skimpy for another 3 weeks or so. I think the summer solstice then will tee us up for a possible weather pattern change if one is going to come about. But we've been in this mostly warm, mostly dry type weather pattern basically since the spring equinox.
Has this tumble lower in both the corn and soybeans just been on the ideas of a supply-driven marketplace that it will have much more supply of corn, at least, by the time, could anyway, by the time we get to the fall? Or is there demand that has slacked off in the near term and the expectations for that to continue to be so as we move into the next marketing year?
But corn demand has slowed a little bit. There's a little worries going on in China as far as what their demand for corn may or may not be as we go forward. But export demand for soybeans is very stout. The export booking is very strong for August, September, October. And it's unlikely that we're going to see very many new crop beans harvested then. So I think old crop cash supplies of soybeans could be very scarce as we get toward the end of the marketing year. But, no, I think a lot of this decline in commodities clear across the board is principally driven by the collapse of the Eurozone and what all the ramifications that's going to be as Greece and Spain and Portugal and Italy, you know, it just looks like that whole thing is going to come unglued. And as that comes unglued, everybody runs for a safe haven type. And right at the moment, the safe haven is the U.S. dollar. Now, once they get things straightened out in Europe, then we'll turn around and print more money to devalue our currency. So it's a worldwide currency devaluation because of all of the politicians worldwide. They're all the same. They overpromise what they can deliver to their people, and the only way they can really get themselves out of the box is to devalue the currency and print more money. And Europe's going to have to do that. Either they do it with the euro dollar or the individual countries go back to their original currency before the Eurozone and print those. And then that will be measured against the dollar. And then our economy is more likely going to slow as the European countries slow. So I think we're teeing ourselves up for so-called double dip. I'm not too sure we ever did really pull out of a recession. Maybe technically you can kind of argue that there's been some improvement, but we got a long ways to go before this economy is going to grow any kind of speed at all.
Do the charts in the dollar give you any technical clues on timing?
Well, I think the dollar longer term has bottomed, and I do think the dollar is going to climb higher in the long run. But for the last several years, we've kind of been in this 80 plus or minus 10 points. And since we were able to kind of clear this 80 and get into this 82, 83 area, a lot of your chart people now are probably targeting a move to the upper 80s as this whole Eurozone thing kind of comes undone. And then once we get past that, then my guess is then the dollar would probably be time for quantitative easing 3 or 4 or 5, whatever Bernanke wants to call it. We're not even going to get through the year without having to raise the debt ceiling. And a year ago when they raised the debt ceiling, that was supposed to last through the election, and it doesn't even look like it's going to last through the election. So we haven't stopped spending here in the United States either. So after Europe gets done, then the focus will come back, I think, to the U.S., and it'll be quite interesting, as we go forward. And I think politicians of all flavors, at the end of the day, they print money. That's the thing that they can do. And I think that's ultimately going to happen.
Dan, thanks so much for taking the time with us, and safe trip back to Louisiana.
Very well.
Bye. Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises, and he joins us from Decatur, Illinois, but usually in the future, of course, will be located in Mandeville. We'll talk to him more. And go down and see him in August. If you'd like to be along on that trip, you can right here at willag.org. You'll find all the details of our Follow the Corn bus tour. Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Well, farmers in this state can find out exactly which herbicides will not kill the water hemp in their fields. I'll have more on why the state's Soybean Association has funded a screening project at the University of Illinois. Water hemp. It was once a weed farmers in the state of Illinois didn't even know about. At times long gone, and now a glyphosate-resistant water hemp is marching northward through the state. And most times, it's resistant to many more herbicides, says University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager.
I think across a fairly large area of central and north-central Illinois that the water hemp populations that are, again, resistant to one or more herbicide families are going to become more and more common.
The evolution of herbicide-resistant water hemp is spreading northward, as evidenced by the number of samples the University of Illinois has screened from those parts of the state. Again this season, the Illinois Soybean Association has funded the screening process. Now, farmers can have water hemp samples screened at the Urbana-Champaign campus free of charge. A form to fill out and complete directions can be found on the IPM Bulletin website at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. The process starts by spraying a field, either corn or soybeans, with glyphosate, and then sending in 5 water hemp plant samples that did not die.
Each plant that sampled should be placed in an individual Ziploc bag and then mailed into us. We really don't need the entire plant. Really, all we need is about the top 1 to 2 inches of growth. That part of the plant that has the newest, the youngest leaf tissue is where we'll actually use, or what we'll actually use to do the molecular biology techniques.
The 5 samples from one field, each in its own Ziploc bag, should be overnighted to the University of Illinois. One more time again now, you can find out about the free herbicide resistance screening for water hemp at the University of Illinois. It's paid for and funded by the Illinois Soybean Association by visiting this website. It's bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. Now up next, a new U of I study suggests, given current variable and fixed costs of production, ethanol plants are losing money when the cash price of corn exceeds $6.75 a bushel. That's not a problem today, but it has been in the past. I'll have more with one of the study's authors. The tightness of the old crop corn supply and demand balance is a subject of considerable debate as we head into the final quarter of the 2011-12 marketing year. The final degree of tightness will be a function, of course, of several variables, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Herwin, including the accuracy of previous USDA stocks estimates, the availability and price of feed wheat this summer, the amount of early harvested corn available in August, and the consumption pace of end users. This last variable is mainly a function of livestock numbers, both in the U.S. and overseas, and ethanol production here in the United States. Since livestock feeders have a limited capacity to adjust usage over a few months, Irwin claims ethanol producers would likely bear the brunt of any additional rationing of corn if it's necessary.
So we have a model of a representative Iowa ethanol plant that we have built and have used to explore the profitability of ethanol production in the past. And we use that same model to basically back out the maximum price that this representative plant could pay over time for a bushel of corn and still cover their variable costs.
Again, the key question is, what cash price of corn will force ethanol plants to throttle back production or shut down completely? The shutdown level of an ethanol plant is simply the point where revenue no longer covers the variable costs of production. Continuing production beyond this point only adds to the losses incurred via the fixed costs.
We compute that, you know, based on the most recent price of ethanol, that you would need cash corn prices near $6.75 and above over a sustained period of time to force some more ethanol plants to throttle back or close production for a short period of time.
Well, the computed shutdown price, by the way, varies widely over time, and this largely reflects, says Scotter, when the changing price of ethanol. Two peaks in the shutdown price are observed over time, $8.25 in July of 2008 and $10.21 a bushel in November of 2011. A low of $3.69 per bushel of corn was reached in March of 2009 and 2010. Now, the shutdown price for most of the spring of this year, 2012, exceeded $7. The most recent observations suggest ethanol plants must throttle back at about $6.75 for a bushel of corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Naturally, that study was maybe a week and a half old, and things change fairly quickly, so you have to take it as it's being meant, and that is just to give you an idea of how the ethanol production works.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
On the phone line to take a look at the cash grain market now with us is TGM's Matt Bennett. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Been busy in the elevator today?
Oh, very busy. We're shipping out a ton of corn and beans, and we're still getting a little bit of stuff off the farm as well.
And so you're shipping it out, meaning you have really strong demand still for corn and beans, and I bet you're still paying overs.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, we're still running 35 over on cash corn. So,
what do you think of the drop in the marketplace today?
Well, boy, the bean market really took it on the chin. You know, corn's kind of had a rough go lately. It's kind of trying to decide which direction it wants to go, and it's kind of a blasé day on the corn market. But, man, the corn bean market sure took it on the chin. It really got hit hard, and I guess I was a little surprised by the severity of it.
Why did it happen? Was it just the end of the month and long liquidation, or are there other variables in play?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main things I'm hearing is end of the month, and, you know, a lot of guys are still, you know, I saw a couple things where guys were talking about ratios being still out of whack and moving forward, you know, with the southern hemisphere in a few months making planning decisions. You know, there's talk of an enormous acreage, you know, that's going to be weighing on the market. So I think any good weather that we have here in the U.S., you're going to see a fair amount of pressure on especially bean market.
Have you had rainfall there today?
We have. It hasn't been anything to get too excited about, but any rain's good rain. We've probably had about a half inch at the most.
And your bids for the day?
Okay, cash corn 590 and fall be 497, and then cash beans 1326 and fall be 1245.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM in Windsor, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. In just a couple minutes, I'll return. We'll talk more about that weather forecast with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media.
It's National Macaroon Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1744, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations were a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines. In 1790, the first U.S. copyright law was signed by George Washington. In 1872, C.G. Abbott was born. An American astrophysicist, he was the first scientist who suspected that the radiation of the sun varied over time. His studies on solar radiation led him to eventually discover a connection between solar variations and weather on Earth, allowing general weather patterns to be predicted up to 50 years ahead. And in 1884, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg applied for a patent for flake cereal. He was trying to improve the vegetarian diet of his hospital patients by searching for a digestible bread substitute by the process of boiling wheat. Kellogg accidentally left a pot of boiled wheat to stand, and it became tempered. When it was put through a rolling process, each grain of wheat emerged as a large, thin flake. And when the flakes were baked, they became crisp and light, creating an easy-to-prepare breakfast when milk was added. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. 26 minutes ago when we started our program, we had just about 7-tenths of an inch seven one-hundredths of an inch on the ground here in terms of precipitation. Now full tenth, and it's raining at a rate of just about a tenth of an inch per hour. On the phone line to tell us a little bit more about how much rainfall we might really get in this part of the world and other parts of the Midwest is meteorologist Pete Levitt for Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Thanks so much.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's cloudy, cool, and a little bit of rainfall. How much do you think we'll actually get in total?
Well, we've got a pretty solid band of precipitation from about, just around Milwaukee southward through the Chicago area, south-southwestward down to Springfield. And between Chicago and Springfield, most of the stations are reporting moderate to occasionally heavy rain. So local amounts of about a half inch to three-quarters of an inch an hour certainly wouldn't be out of the realm of likelihood in this case. However, it's not going to last very long. The system is moving eastward very nicely, and it's already into the western half of Indiana, and it's already becoming just intermittent and light showery in most of western Illinois. And so this system will go by this evening, tonight, and the rain will end, and tomorrow we're not looking at much of any precipitation from central Indiana on westward. We still have a day of shower activity for tomorrow from central Indiana on eastward through Ohio and up into the northeastern states and southward through Kentucky, Tennessee, and down into Mississippi, Alabama region, but amounts generally less than a half an inch in that region. So this is a big chance to get some precipitation over the next several days. Once this goes by, it looks like just a day or two where we'll see some intermittent light showers once in a while, not much in the way of accumulation. The temperatures will be averaging mostly below normal and then come back towards normal in the latter part of next week. Not a lot of rain. And the Western Corn Belt looks like they've already seen out of this precipitation. And we're still looking at dry conditions in the Southern Plains wheat area. We're seeing showers from the lower Mississippi Valley on eastward, but to the west of the River Valley, just a few showers here and there over the next several days. So dryness will persist down there. So we've got drought causing problems in the central and southern portions of the plains. We've got adequate moisture in the east central plains in the Midwest. In the western portions of the Midwest, the amounts have improved over earlier weeks, and we've got adequate moisture there to last another week or so.
Thanks so much for the update. We do appreciate it, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, my pleasure, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon, telling us that things had dampened off, but they're going to dry out once again. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.